If you want to get your favorite technical news, give the Gizmo Gang a call. Gizmo Sapien.
Hey, and welcome to Gizmo Sapien Show 160. This is our first show of 2021, which has already been a shit show in and of itself. I'm not going to go into that, but my God, I'm glad I don't pay for cable TV, because...
Why bother?
Absolutely, why bother? So, a little of our news is a little... We tried to do this a week ago, but due to scheduling conflicts, because life has been very busy for all the Gizmo Sapiens, we didn't get to it, but we're going to go over it anyway. So... I just find it incredibly interesting that the hackers who performed a sophisticated attack, and that attack was also based on the use of a product called SolarWinds, that not only caused all kinds, well, caused the compromise of multiple United States government agencies, but a ton of private companies, including Microsoft, where part of their source code was stolen. It just reaffirms my belief, having worked in the data center world for most of my professional career, that having a heterogeneous solution for everything, which the government has decided that for the most part, everything has to be Windows. And then a lot of government agencies, the reason it was so devastating that you had a hack that happened on SolarWinds that was then used to infiltrate all these government agencies, kind of tells you that maybe a heterogeneous solution is the way to go.
You know, government, we just had this discussion off air. Government builds in redundancy all over government. Why they think this works for technology when they don't do it anywhere else. I would love for government to be more... streamlined, but we never seem to get that anywhere else but technology.
Yeah, well, you know, no matter how, and if you've listened to our podcast, you know how we kind of sit, all the Gizmo Sapiens sit on the technology side. There are those of us who are you know, major Apple users. There are those of us who are major Windows users. There are those of us who use Linux as a lot of their day-to-day computing. And this being my particular specialty, in I've always, and having worked for the Department of Defense, I've always questioned the heterogeneous solution mentality. Now, I understand why the DoD went that way, and the reason is in the DoD's terms, they treat everything and every specialty that they do like you would treat a rifleman. And so you issue a rifleman a rifle, it'll be, you know, it'll shoot NATO rounds, and all the parts of your rifle will be interchangeable with all the parts of every rifle from all the other services and every one of your colleagues. And that's how they went about designing IT networks, is I'm going to issue you a Windows 10 or a Windows 7 or Windows XP. I mean, they've all been bad. And everybody else is going to get issued the same thing. And then I only have to train you on that thing. You know, I don't have to train you on how to, you know, do a directory listing on the command line of Linux when you know how to do it on Windows, because you're never going to touch Linux. You know, that's the mentality. That's not entirely how things are set up, but for the most part, that's the way systems are sourced. And that goes to another point. All those requirements have to be a matter of public record in the United States. So it is not hard for hackers to go and go, look, the requirements for this solution at the U.S. Treasury Department or the requirements for this solution over here, they're all requesting Windows. So what known Windows exploits can we use to try to get in, you know? And they try to develop this idea of defense in depth. But in the case of SolarWinds, defense in depth didn't matter because they infiltrated SolarWinds, which then got them behind the scenes. Now, does this happen all over the world? Absolutely. Why do we hear about it? Because it happened to us. But it doesn't mean that we haven't done it to others. And that's a lot of this, the issue. Now, what is probably pretty interesting, I would say that the majority of the 18,000 customers that had SolarWinds who had the compromised update, that probably the U.S. government and probably several large corporations that they knew had this product was reason that SolarWinds was targeted, because somebody found a way to get into SolarWinds, which then, because of tenders or RFP requests, RFI requests by government agencies that are public record, were then, hey, wait, this might get us into X and this might get us into Z. And everybody's wanting, I mean, it's not like Microsoft hasn't had their source code leaked before. I mean, the entirety of Windows XP source code is out there somewhere. And you know that that's where some of these zero-day attacks are coming from. But, you know, it's one of those things that astounds me on top of everything that else that goes on. I guess it reaffirms my faith that the government can't get out of its own way. Or as a good friend of mine who is one of my bosses in the DOD used to say, is they keep stepping on their own dicks.
Colorful and accurate.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to mark this episode explicit.
That's your fault, not mine.
I know, but based on our conversations prior to recording, did you expect any less?
Not really.
So another thing that I find ridiculous as CES has come and gone for 2021 is a couple of things. One of them is we're still talking about foldable smartphones.
That's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, and no, we're no, no,
still
no.
Talking about
no,
it is,
there,
is
there's one that's dumber. LG has a rollable smartphone where the screen can get bigger and smaller because it rolls up. And I mean, yes, it would be great to have a single screen that you could fold up, but one of the advantages of and the technological marvels of today's smartphones, and largely I think it would be a different story had Apple not been involved, but the fact that it's glass, which conducts electricity to the digitizer layer extremely well, makes these things work extremely well. These foldable smartphones are not made of glass. We're going back to like a plastic substrate that you touch, and plastic is a pretty good insulator. And that's why, you know, a lot of video game consoles that had the touch screen, they sucked. You touch, particularly after you've touched, you know, an Apple or a Samsung smartphone, they have glass, and when you touch it's responsive and it works, you know. But the idea of having a foldable iPhone or a roll-up Android phone so that the screen gets bigger, I just don't see that as a practical sense of technology. What I do see as a practical set of technology is like a holographic keyboard. Like, you know, that we've seen that for several years. There was the idea where there was a laser and it and there were sensors next to the laser and you could get this keyboard that was really a light and it would project the keyboard on a flat surface. And then where your fingers interrupted the light over a key, it would cause that keystroke. To me, that's a much more practical use if you could build that into like a smartphone so that.
As bad as autocorrect is already.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, but at least it'd be funny when you got some text or email from people. but to me that's a better use of technology than, hey, let's try to figure out how to make a single screen foldable phone. Because last year that's what they did and every one of those phones was a disaster. You know, they I'm trying to remember who even released their phone and that caused so many problems that they recalled them all and they were supposed to re-release the phone and they still haven't. It was LG or Samsung, one of the two. And the funny thing is LG talks about this, they released this rollable phone screen. And just the other day, their mobile chief said, we may be exiting the mobile market.
Even better.
Yeah.
No, I mean, to me, what all of this is about trying to find some disruptive technology that will revolutionize the smartphone industry, and none of it is revolutionary or disruptive.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can understand the idea of a foldable smartphone. So say you had like a...
don't get me wrong. These phones are getting ridiculously large.
They are. But that's the whole convergence of tablet to phone. In my mind,
yeah.
Is that so we're making a phone that we can fold in half so it'll fit in our pocket, but we can unfold it and it's a tablet that makes phone calls. And I think that's really the market, but is that revolutionary? No, that's just the collapsing of the tablet market into the phone market, or the phone market growing up into the tablet market, which it kind of has been for a long time. I mean, you have the iPhone XLs and you have the Galaxy Notes and, you know, and I agree with you. Some of these phones are getting to the point where they're not smartphones. They're
mini tablets.
They're mini tablets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, like anything, Apple is supposed to, they have two different prototypes out that are two totally different approaches to a foldable phone. And I will say this for Apple, whatever they put out, it will be significantly different than what has been seen before, because well, Apple is a very innovative company. They are not I tried to explain this to people. They don't... every time I say this, in the back of my mind, I think of that 80s commercial for He Will Serve No Wine Before It's Time. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how their approach to technology. Yeah, they're aware of all these things going on the market. They may have prototypes, but they're not going to release it until, one, it's typically very reliable. And the user experience is what their users come to expect. But two, they're never the first to do it, you know. But when they do it, everybody copies their implementation or tries to. So, I don't know. I have the whole Apple ecosystem at home because the majority, but I have... There's really no Windows ecosystem anymore since they don't really have phones anymore. but I have Windows machines. And I run lots of Linux servers and things. I love the Apple ecosystem. Like, you know, your Apple Watch provides biometric security for your desktops and laptops. And I love the Face ID biometric security on the phone. And the fingerprint sensors that are even built in the laptops. but the reality of when I look at my use of my equipment, I use a MacBook, sometimes with a Bluetooth keyboard and trackpad and hooked to a bigger monitor when I'm sitting at my desk. And I use my phone. My iPad, it's my game thing. I sit on the couch, I read the news, I surf the web a little bit, and I play games. And I have the Apple Pencil and everything else. I don't use any of that. You know, when I want to take notes or I need to do something real, like record a podcast, write a document. It all happens on my laptop. And if you look at the use case of how it works in the world today, mobile websites still suck compared to regular websites. And although both Apple iPhones and flagship Android phones can view full desktop sites, the industry thinks that even those should be relegated to a separate mobile site. You know, and but I have found that the mobile sites, particularly if it's something where you have to interact, they do not work. They probably work maybe 70% of the time. Because my wife has this habit of, she'll sit on the couch with her iPhone and she'll try to log into things via the web. And I'm like, you're never going to see the data you need to see. Or she'll go, it's not there. It's not there. And I said, you have to log into it with your laptop. She'll go log into it with her laptop, and all of a sudden what she's looking for is on the website, because it's not obscured by the mobile site, which doesn't load completely, or the actual functionality of the site is obscured by the fact that they're trying to give you a diminished display of items. I don't know. It's just weird.
Well, that's kind of been the trend, though, anyway.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, for the most part, there's only one company who's making tablets anymore. There's like one and a half. Samsung still makes the Galaxy tablets. They don't advertise them. You can find them at Sam's Club and Costco. I don't know that I've seen a tablet, a Samsung or Linux tablet, other than the Amazon Fire at Best Buy in recent times. And
I think what they're doing is they are doing their distribution through the cell phone stores.
They could be, because they want people to buy the cellular enabled devices.
Yeah.
But people don't typically go into the cell phone store unless they need a new phone.
Well, and that's just it. They're packaging those with a new phone.
Yeah.
Which is irritating.
Well, the other thing that I think, with the exception of, and you know, and Microsoft has their take on it, they want to call the Surface a tablet, but in reality, they're touchscreen laptops because they're running Windows 10. I don't know how many reviews and things I've seen, because I have a Surface Go that I really like. Part of the reason I like it is it's small, but it has a very nice keyboard and trackpad. But when I was buying it, I was reading all the reviews, and I'd had many Surface devices before that. One of the Surface device, or about half the reviews on Microsoft's own website, was, my wife bought this for me. I use apps. I don't use a Windows desktop. So I had her return it, you know? A lot of that has to do with the fact that Microsoft's App Store doesn't have the applications that both the Google Play Store and mm-hmm. iOS Store has, and how people want to use and interact with those apps. And the other thing I think is kind of funny is for the most part, outside of a work environment or a education environment, most people typically don't use office type apps. So, at least they don't use them on tablets.
Agreed.
You know?
But I think that's because of availability.
But office apps are on all tablets. You can get Microsoft Office on Google.
Fair enough.
On Apple, on Windows.
But then again, what did you get your tablet for?
Well, exactly. I think the bigger part of it is the lack of keyboard. Now, I mean, I have the full keyboard with the trackpad and everything for my iPad. And I do find that useful, because sometimes it's more convenient. That's also why I have the Surface Go. When I'm just going to somewhere where I need to take notes quickly, those devices are good, but they're really more toys for me because my laptop's not so much bigger that I couldn't take that and use it either. And in many cases, I'd rather have the even more superior touch of the keyboards that are built into laptops than what you have on either a convertible or a tablet. I don't know. But again, it's only on the high-end or tablets, if you want to call it that, that you have decent keyboards, or you even have keyboards and a trackpad at all. Because I'll tell you, one of the interesting things, particularly about using iOS, is, and I don't know if people don't know this, if you hold your thumb, if you're like in, you can be in Pages, which is word processor, or even Word on your iPhone. In iOS, if you put your thumb and hold it on the spacebar, it will then let you move the cursor around to wherever you want it, like a mouse will. Well, on a tablet, it'll do the same thing, but it's much less convenient without having the keyboard, because now you have to pick your fingers up and move them around, and not in a, you know, what we would call a comfortable typing position. Whereas the iPhone and Samsung phones are small enough that even the bigger phones, that you're holding them like a BlackBerry between your two, you know, your fingers and your thumb and your index finger, and you're able to manipulate. So it makes it much easier to manipulate on a much smaller screen. So without that, having that trackpad, but just having a keyboard, it sucks trying to place the cursor on an iPad. And I've had the same similarity because I did have a Galaxy Tab 7. If I didn't use a mouse, it sucked just using a keyboard with it to try to move that cursor around, you know, to get the right placement and to highlight things so you could bold them, you know. That experience, it's getting better, but it's not perfect. And what I find funny about my Surface Go, which has a great keyboard and trackpad, because it's really a laptop that has a touchscreen, you know, a very micro laptop that has a touchscreen, is that I don't use the touchscreen hardly at all. I always use the trackpad. So that makes me question, why is it a touchscreen device?
Because they were trying to be innovative and different and all of that. And whenever Microsoft does that, it never works. It's never innovative. It's never disruptive. You wind up going back to doing what you were doing before.
Well, because it's faster, which makes it more efficient.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's move on from that. So this, another one is a head scratcher for me. So it's been interesting because, but Google's technology workers have created a union. So my curiosity is, one, how much farther, or how long will it last? Because, you know, the issue with the union is the same argument I have about teachers, which is, if you're a, unions are really there to protect unskilled workers. And so Google's workers formed, it's the Alphabet Workers Union, because it's not just Google, it's the entire Alphabet company. And the idea is to protect tech workers. Well, does that mean tech workers are not professionals who require higher education? That's one question you have to ask.
Well, I will say this. Tech companies have been on the front edge of hiring people who can do the job and not necessarily have certifications to do it.
I agree with you there. And I don't believe, to be a professional or an expert in your field, that you need to have a college degree at all. I've met too many people who are VPs and directors in companies and things like that, who are not, you know, who don't hold those credentials, but are far superior in what they're able to do and the way they think than the people who spent 4 6, 10 years in a higher in state and federal institutions to supposedly be the intellectual experts in technology, and that's not the case. But what I think is interesting, and I will say this, is that tech companies, part of their culture has always been, I don't want to say it's abuse of employees, but it's to push employees. You know, Google's campus is built to keep their employees there. You know, they have laundry services that are free. They feed their employees. They have nap pods. They have recreational, and they're not the only one. I've been to Microsoft and Redmond, and I've been to Apple's campus, and I've been all over the Silicon Valley, because in my career I've worked for companies there as well. And so, you know, the idea of a union in some respects makes sense, you know, protecting, you know, so many hour work day. If you work more than that, give me time and a half. If I work, you know, another level, give me 2 or 3x per hour. But these are salaried employees, not hourly employees. And that's the issue. So how does that work? Because state tax law determine, and federal tax law determine, whether you're an exempt or non-exempt employee. And depending on if you are an exempt employee is a determination on whether you get paid overtime, and whether that's time and a half or double time or triple time, you know, depending on. So there are already protections in place for that at both the state, at almost every state. And I'm assuming California has it too. I never lived in California, so I've never had to deal with it there. But the other issue is really what they were fighting for, because the first thing that the union is tackling was the firing of one of their research chiefs in their artificial intelligence department. And here, let me pull this up. Excuse me. There it is. It'll be the last one on this page. Maybe not the last one on this page. I must not have saved it. But they got rid of this research chief because I think they wrote a paper that kind of criticized Google's work in AI. And so the co-research chief, and that was a few months ago, the co-research chief, who is a member of the Alphabet Workers Union, just got all her access on the network revoked because she was looking at some of the research that the fired co-research chief had. And so she was copying files within Google's network. I mean, it wasn't like, and was going through her emails. And part of the reason that she was going through her emails was she was looking for discrimination against her colleague and her own herself. And so now she's been locked out of her accounts within Google's system. And so now there's a big union grievance and all this other stuff. Well, a lot of this would be solved if California was a right to work state.
I'm just amused that a union was formed to protect anyone with chief in their title.
Oh, absolutely.
Just start with that. They keep using that word, union, but I don't think they know what it means.
Yeah.
If you follow my logic. I just, these things are supposed to protect the little guy.
Yeah.
There isn't anybody working at Google that can be classified as a little guy.
No, even
the little guys.
Even the little guys are big guys compared to the real little guys. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a head scratcher, to say the least.
It's definitely a first world problem.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
It is a first world problem.
But I will say that speaks volumes about Google's culture.
Absolutely.
That you can't criticize what your company is doing.
Well, and I don't think it was like open criticism of Google or Alphabet. It was criticizing the way they're doing their AI approach. And I actually think in reading the other article, it comes down to, because there's the complaint that the union, the Alphabet Workers Union, has filed against Google, or is that the woman who is, she's got this VP title. There's a woman with a VP title who is like the VP of AI mm-hmm. for Google, but she is not the direct superior, or she wasn't the direct superior of this research group until they got rid of this researcher. And so a lot of this is directed at, I think it's in a knee-jerk reaction response to a superior, this VP, you know, didn't want herself to be criticized because she would have been the one to blame. And see, if you had right to work laws, they wouldn't have been able to get rid of the AI research, head of research, or co-head of AI research, without documenting why. Because without right to work laws, you are an at-will employee. And as far as I really understand, even these union employees are at-will employees. Just because you're in a union doesn't mean you're not at will, which means you can be let go for any reason whatsoever. I mean, they don't like the color of your tennis shoes one day, you can be let go. And almost all professional, what people who are considered professionals and work in professional positions and work on salary are at will employees across the United States. Right to work laws not only protect hourly employees from workplace injustice, but they protect the people who are right now at-will employees. And so they formed a union to cover protecting people who are at-will. Because if this is a vendetta by this VP because she didn't like what this researcher said, that would be protected by state law. But as an at-will employee, it's not really protected, because she could say, well, you know, she was disrespectful in a meeting. We decided that, you know, we're letting her go. And that's kind of what's happened to the co-researcher who is trying to CYA herself. And because she was looking at data, they thought they were monitoring. That's the other problem. They were monitoring this data. Why didn't they mark it, encrypt the data, and mark it so it couldn't be accessed? That's what you would do if you weren't trying to entrap other people.
Don't be evil. That's all I got to say.
Exactly. So enough said on that. So one last thing here. And this is another putting lipstick on a pig type solution that we see a lot from Microsoft. But Microsoft is planning a sweeping visual rejuvenation of Windows that is designed to signal to users the operating system that Windows is back. Because so it'll be sucky as always, but it'll look more like a previously sucky version of Windows. That's what it looked like. They were hiring a software engineer role to work in the Windows Core User Experience team, which is their GUI team. And but that was the sweeping visual rejuvenation of Windows was in the job description that was posted online. Now they've since gone back and taken that piece out. And I think it's more than just rumors. On my Windows machines, I'm in the insider or beta program, so I get a lot of the things before they hit the biannual updates that they now do, or they update Windows every 6 months with a so I would imagine here in 2021, probably towards the end, we're probably going to see some of these changes come in where they're trying to make Windows more windowized again. Remember, because we went away and made it more tabletized. And
Yeah, and somehow in doing so, it made all my software that I had purchased for a previous version of Windows now suddenly can't work at all.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to miraculously make that software work again.
I don't think so either, but that's the frustration with Windows.
Yeah.
Every time I hear words like that, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to buy software that I've bought. It's like my favorite movie.
Yeah, buying an... I buy it
on VHS, I buy it on
DVD.
Then I buy it on Blu-ray, and then I have to buy it on a streaming package somewhere.
Yeah, no, I agree with you.
It's aggravating. It's the same movie.
Yeah.
It should still work.
I agree. I don't disagree with you there. Now, I have a little bit of a different frustration with digital media and streaming services. You know, in the perfect world, I subscribe to CBS All Access because I want access to all the Star Trek stuff.
Aren't they Paramount Plus
and
now?
In March, not until March. Oh, okay. They become Paramount Plus on March 8th.
I'll give you that. All right.
And it's the same service. You know, CBS All Access, you know, they talk about Paramount Plus getting MTV and Nickelodeon and all the stuff that Paramount movies, CBS All Access already has all that. They started integrating that in back in September. But what's irritating, and I have HBO Max too, and part of the reason I got HBO Max was because all the Warner Brothers first run movies were being run on HBO Max. I wanted to see Wonder Woman 1984, which, by the way, I think is a lot better than the critics' plaint. It was entertaining. Superhero movies are to be entertained, or to entertain me. They don't have to be deep. They don't always have to make sense. One of the best movies, and people have complained about it, and I know we're taking a side thing here. Best movies, I think, just entertaining wise in the world, is Jupiter Ascending, which was a Wachowski brothers movie, or Wachowski sisters, whatever you want to call it. And I don't know the proper pronouns, because one of them something and one of them something else. So, but it's a super fast-paced movie, and there are plot holes you could drive, you know, a train through. But it's so entertaining to watch because it becomes immersive. It's like Fast and the Furious in a space combat. It's like Halo as a movie with a plot.
that you could drive
a train through. Well, and actually, the plot does not have as many holes as you think. It's just the holes are all based upon the belief that humans haven't figured out that there's a greater universe outside of them, and they still think, at least at the moment, that all these things that have happened are actually directly responsible by only people on the planet. I mean, if you can't suspend disbelief to believe that, then you can't follow the rest of the movie, you know. But for this movie, I can do it. But that being said, the streaming services, even like HBO Max, they don't have to do this because they own the property. But instead of like leaving Wonder Woman 1984 up, because I paid for the streaming service,
it was only on. It's only on from December 25th through the 24th of this month. So there's 2 days left. Friday or Sunday will be the last day that they're showing Wonder Woman 1984 on HBO Max. Then where is it going?
Well, it's because it was. That's also when they're pulling it from movie theaters. Because then, in a month or so, you're going to see it in Target and Walmart to purchase. On Blu-ray or DVD or whatever. I think that's stupid. And I think that I can understand it when you're a service like Netflix, and before Netflix started making all their own properties, that they were licensing a property from somebody, and that license lasted for so long, and then it went away. But if you own the licensing, again, CBS All Access, kind of same. CBS is different. They haven't been pulling anything from their network as they've added to it. But, like, why didn't they add the whole catalog that was already digitized from Paramount to CBS All Access's platform?
Well, I think part of that comes down to they have to have something to talk about. And so if you're waiting for a particular movie to hit your platform...
Now, it's not a movie I was actually waiting for. I was waiting for all the seasons of SpongeBob SquarePants, but...
Well, there you go.
But you know what I'm saying.
But that's what I'm saying, though. At some point, there's going to be a press release that's set out that says, hey, SpongeBob Season 7, ready to go.
Yeah,
come check it out.
It will. I mean,
and that's what they're doing.
I understand that. But the reason I don't want to... I don't care if they stagger the releases so much, but I don't like the idea that they own the property. I'm never going to go and buy a copy of Wonder Woman 1984.
Oh, I'll never buy another... You know this about me. I was a huge DVD guy.
Oh, I know.
I'll never buy another one.
I don't... Well, I have a bookcase full of... Well, I have two bookcases full of DVDs and Blu-rays. And with the exception of maybe 15 of them, I'm ready to get rid of them. And my wife has, she's like, but I want to keep this and I want to keep that. And I'm like, if I can get it on one of the 6 streaming services that we belong to, I don't want it, you know? And stuff.
No, I'm totally with you.
Let's bring that around to Windows. One of the issues, I think, with Windows and there's 2 issues with Windows 10. Because there's more than 2 issues. But I'm going to talk about 3 issues now. Now that I think about it. One, Windows, when you have Windows 7 and the software that worked on Windows 7, Windows 10 at some point forces you to upgrade.
Yes.
And in the upgrade process, they had a thing that
they
said,
promised me that my software will work. And it didn't.
And the company you own.
I will never forgive them for that, by the way. Never.
I also blame the company who you bought the software for. They should have done the due diligence, particularly after it was out for a while. Now, I can see you upgrade to Windows 10 and the software that you had purchased didn't work. You know, the company didn't. They took the stance of, because this happened.
But it was a PR nightmare for Microsoft because they're the ones who's. One, forced the update, and two, told me it was going to work.
Yeah. You're right.
I don't blame Pinnacle for that. I blame Microsoft for that, and I always will.
Yeah. But on the flip side, Pinnacle should have had a patch for that version if it supposedly worked for free. Not the solution of...
But is that Pinnacle's problem, or is that Microsoft's problem?
Actually, it's Pinnacle's problem, because here's the deal. So Microsoft... As the operating system vendor, and don't get me wrong, I don't like defending Microsoft, but this is actually something that happened. And it's not an... Every time, you know, Apple does an annual update of macOS, and they try to make it as easy as possible for developers to move to the next thing. You know, they only charge $99 for a dev account, and that dev account can... be for an individual or can be for an entire organization of developers, you know, at a company, so that they get access to the beta software. They can run it on a machine. They can, I mean, same thing happened, you know, now that Apple's moving to their Apple SoC processors. They've made all the software available. They've made deep discounts in buying developer machines. They made deep discounts in developer units for people a year ago, before they even released it, to borrow a machine so that they could take their code and, you know, tweak it if they had to, so that it would be ready when they release the ones to the consumers. Microsoft has a developer program. It is not as nice as that. It's a lot more expensive. But if you were a Microsoft developer, you are already in that program, Pinnacle included, because you have to use Visual Studio to get your product to market. Pinnacle decided to take the approach of, we're going to let them release Windows 10, and then we're going to fix our product.
Well, part two of that is Pinnacle got bought out. Or was it? It was Avid originally, and Pinnacle bought them. Avid.
Yeah.
I got in under Avid and made the transition to Pinnacle, and then Windows screwed me.
I mean, that's the perception, but the reality of it is
Pinnacle,
screwed you too.
But the key word there is two.
Yeah.
And I go back and say, had Windows not forced me to upgrade from 7 to 10, I'd still have a machine here that would be dedicated to running my video editing software, and I'd have bought another machine to run Windows 10 on.
Yeah.
But here we are. I wasn't given the choice.
Yeah, true. Well, I mean, you could always, even today, we could probably, well, we can't roll that machine back is the problem. We can reinstall, but where's your Pinnacle license?
I'm sure somewhere in my storage room, I have all of my disks.
Yeah. But at this point, it's not worth it.
But what a PITA that would be anyway.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. So, I think that's it for episode 160. I'm Chris, and
I'm Matt,
and we are the Gizmo Sapiens, at least the Gizmo Sapiens that are here with you today. And we want to hear from you, so send us some feedback at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. And we'll see you on the digital flip side.
You've been listening to Gizmo Sapiens, a technology and entertainment podcast. You can reach us at our email address at gizmosapiens@gmail.com. That's gizmosapiens@gmail.com. We'd really love to hear from you, and we'll see you next week from the digital flip side.